talk about government, music, art, health, science, geology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 4th on the West Coast, now February the 5th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. We'd also like to welcome, besides those listening on BBSRadio.com, folks in the military around the world listening on Wind Talkers Radio Network, and on blogtalkradio.com on the internet. Well, I'm going to cut right to the chase tonight. Might just mention that there are some that were hoping I wouldn't be on the air tonight, but I hate to disappoint them. Here I am. And I've got a good friend with me. He hosts his own radio show on blogtalkradio.com, as well as on Wind Talkers Radio Network, heard around the world. And he is a former U.S. Marine from 1967 through 1977, an electronics expert. Much of that, I'm sure, came from his training in the military. He's got a background in real estate. He certainly knows a lot about the law and the U.S. Constitution, and he is the host of A Marine's Disquisition, and our guest all this month on every Thursday in February, my good friend, Drew Malone Raines III. Drew, welcome to the show.
Just call me Sleepy.
Call you Sleepy. Okay, well, Sleepy, how are things going in your neck of the woods?
Well, it's one of those things. You know, we got global warming going on, and, you know, somebody told me that today that with all the global warming, we were having a heat wave with a high of 39.
Oh yeah, so, you know, we had global warming in Ohio. It was hovering around 10 degrees above zero. I guess that's global warming as well. And the wind chill even brought it down below zero a few days.
They came out today and on the local media and said that it finally admitted that the last 15 months has been the coldest 15 months on record for the history of Arkansas.
Well, yeah, we had that in our area this summer. You know, we had an all-time low temperature for the whole summer, and I didn't know who to believe. Should I believe the mainstream media, or should I believe Al Gore?
Well, I went back and looked at a few things on the record books that are just hypothesized, because in 1816, the American Indians folklore, and it's really not folklore, they have a pretty deep history. If you could ascertain, find out where all the truth is at, it's not been lied in the paperbacks, meaning anything, the printed word of the white man. But the American Indians from this area talk about 1816 as being the year of the snow. And it was probably, and it's been written in many archives about the 1816 was the year with no summer in the state of Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut. They just didn't have a summer whatsoever, and they couldn't grow over 3/4 of their crops because it was too cold.
Now, did they have a farmer's almanac back then, Drew?
I don't know if they had a farmer's almanac, but those Indians they definitely knew what was going on. But there was several newspaper accounts from the Northeast that still have archives or have collected archives from other newspapers that have gone out of existence, and I think there's probably one of the founding organizations of the Farmers' Almanac up there in Maine is probably responsible for getting that information out from that era, especially on the summer that never was, in the notations and books that are put out by the Farmers' Almanac people.
Hmm.
But with all of that said, I want the audience to know, if you haven't already heard, ladies and gentlemen, that the House of Representatives today passed overwhelmingly the cybersecurity bill. And it came about this afternoon at 16:39, and I was already in the middle of my show with Bob Chapman when they took the vote. The final vote was taken at 4:39, and the bill basically should be a warning to all of you out there, especially people that listen to BBS Radio, that your Second Amendment is going to come under attack. With this cybersecurity bill being passed so overwhelmingly, because the government is going to fund anywhere from 1,000 to 1,500 cyber cops, so for lack of a better term, and they're probably going to go after people like Don Nikoloff and BBS Radio. Under some guise of the Patriot Act movement, and not go after the terrorist organizations of the Al-Qaeda or any other of the Muslim groups out there. I've got friends out here that have finally come around and made comments to me the last couple of days that, Drew, you're right. There's not any Muslims out there that if pushed and pressured are not going to turn against those men and women that are of the Protestant faith.
Or the Christian faith, you mean.
Christian faith, Protestant faith, if you want to call it whatever, it's believers is what they're going to be attacking. And whether they be a Catholic or a Methodist or a Quaker. It's the proof of the pudding came about yesterday. Today's Friday, so it'd be the Wednesday when in Lower Manhattan at 09:35, a Muslim preacher. I don't know what they call them, but I have no idea. I use preacher as a generic term for a man of the cloth. But a Muslim man of the cloth who has been going in and out of the Lower Manhattan prison for over 2 years goes through the security checkpoint and for the first time, the police officers that run the scanning equipment discovered 18 razor blades that are the heavy-duty kind that goes into box cutters in his baggage that he was taking into the prison. And I'm reading through the article that I got. And, Don, I'm going to tell you, I'm livid. I'm livid over the fact that people are so gullible to think that that the Muslims' faith has any decency within its own code, because these people are hell-bent on destroying America, on destroying England, in destroying Germany, any country out there that has a large Christian base, they're infiltrating in mass numbers, and they want to destroy that country. it's like, you know, they have no decency whatsoever to the rule of law. Here's a professed pastor, preacher, whatever the Muslims call their religious superiors, sneaking razor blades into a prison. Don, is there something wrong with this picture?
Well, how is it that this infiltration is accomplished? What precautions are being taken to prevent it in the first place?
Well, they've had these metal detectors up for 2 years, but it's taken 2 years to catch the guy.
Well, obviously, I'm asking somewhat of a rhetorical question. I mean, that you're responding to the issue of the razor blades, but what I'm saying is, if these are dangerous people, if this Cybersecurity Act was enforced to prevent those kind of people from doing whatever it is they claim to do in the act, I haven't read it, so I'm not familiar with the particulars. But what I'm saying is, to me, it seems like if you have a problem with a certain type of individual who has snuck into the country, and you've discovered that they've snuck into the country, wouldn't the thing to do, the proper thing to do, to detain that individual and deport them?
I think the good intentions of the bill is that's the way it was originally written, but what I see here is I see more intrusions on the people's rights. The bill is going to increase the security, quote, the bill will increase the security of vital and personal information by strengthening research partnerships among the federal government with the private sector and colleges, including colleges, universities, and supporting the transfer of promising technologies from researchers to the wider marketplace. Senator Jay Rockefeller, made the comment that the Internet represents a serious threat to national security. And he is glad and overwhelmed that the cybersecurity bill was passed today.
Wasn't the Internet really created for the purpose of and the use of the Pentagon and the military-industrial complex and the corporatism?
Exactly. And yet we, as free people, have used it to fight the elitist and the corrupt individuals who are trying to enslave and murder us. And they don't like it.
Yeah, well, I go back to when I first heard about the Internet. And they said, the Internet is going to be free and everybody can use it and it's going to be wonderful. Right? You're not going to have to pay. Actually, we did pay for it, you see. We did
pay. I can remember when it cost as much as in the beginning, $20 a day.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about, I remember some, I don't even know if they exist anymore, but I remember there was a, one of the portals for getting on the Internet was through Prodigy, if you remember that.
Yeah, I remember Prodigy.
And that was, from what I knew from talking to people that had it, was very expensive. You had to be in a high-end business to be able to afford it. And then we had AOL sending free disks to everybody. Install this software in your computer, and you can use the Internet. But it came with price, didn't it? And the price going up and going up and going up. And as they built up this infrastructure, they saw, wow, we can make a ton of money by charging fees and setting up IP providers and domain providers and web hosts and the whole nine yards. Everything it's become. all the while, you know, like a clamp or a vice tightening its grip on our freedoms, on our freedom of speech. You know, they're now setting everything in place to attack our thinking, even to control our thoughts. You know, and we've talked about that on other shows. Your show, my show, Dr. H. Watts talked about it quite a bit. Isn't it interesting how we all run into the same issues? We're in different parts of the country, and we're undergoing the same experiences. And the odds of that occurring are astronomical, yet it happens very specifically. Of course, most people don't pay attention to it, so they're inclined to believe anything they hear, whether it's true or not. They tend to just, you know, try to stay in the background, play their little video games, go on a line to play poker or whatever it is that most people do. And, you know, that's not a threat to the government. The biggest threat is the truth coming out, isn't it?
Correct.
I mean, it's a simple man.
Historically, America has always sought to address the morality through some form of legislation on we the people. And we've endeavored to control, presently, the sexual activities of consenting adults throughout our history. You know, we passed a constitutional amendment controlling the production and consumption of alcohol, only later to repeal it. We've instituted laws and annually spent countless of millions of dollars trying to control the production and distribution and the consumption of illegal drugs, some of which actually have medical usage. We've attempted to legislate the use of tobacco, particularly among the youth of America. All of these attempts have failed miserably at major expenses. And I look back to just a short 110 years ago when we went through and came into the 19th century, or the 20th century in 1900, and the 20th century first began. There was no laws against growing marijuana in your backyard. There was no laws concerning the laudanum and cocaine for your personal use. If you wanted it, you went to the local pharmacy, you signed for it, and you took a bottle of laudanum home, which was nothing more than a liquefied opium heroin base. Alcoholic beverage, but it wasn't a beverage. It was really medicine, and it would knock you out in a heartbeat. And yes, all over America, there were, you know, people that abused it. There are people that abuse everything. We have people that abuse eating. What are they going to do? They're going to come back and say, well, you can only have one hot dog and, 1 4-ounce glass of water per meal. Because you're over 20 pounds overweight, the legislative process is it's always somebody trying to control others because of the personal beliefs of that person.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislative body of going in here to legislate the internet, Don, is nothing more than a travesty in and of itself and an attack on free speech. People have a right to turn off the TV, and the same holds through with the internet. If you don't like the pornography, don't go visit it. If you don't want the pornography on your computer, report the spam use when you get the pornography. I do it every day, 30 to 40 times, when these little girls send me IMs, please add me to your database. And I have no idea who they are, so I'll add them after I've asked a question, who are you? And the next thing I know, they send me, well, here's a picture of me, and I'm looking at a picture of a 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old girl in the Buffo soliciting sex. And sometimes I want to barf. These people, it's all over the Internet. It's everywhere.
Yeah, to me, that sounds like entrapment, actually. You know, I mean, what are these girls doing during the day? Is that all they do is send out spam emails to people they don't know?
Well, it's not in this case, it's not emails, it's instant messages.
Oh,
and they have like what is a webcam. It costs you, you pay a dollar for an hour, or maybe it's $30 for a month or $10 a month. I mean, it goes all the way down from anywhere from a dollar to have a preview for 3 hours to as much as $40 per month. And all they're doing is selling their video of their sexual habitat, and I'm not into that. I mean, I don't know who these girls are. They're barely old enough to be my daughter. And it bothers me that they are the daughter of somebody out there, and I haven't gotten any of the queer or homosexual deviants that are of the male side, but I have a couple of friends that have, and they say, Drew, it's just sickening. It's just, it's to the point where you want to throw up. Do you want to just turn the computer off and throw it out in the street? And Don, this has got to stop somehow. But this legislation over this, that's wrong.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned, I want to jump back. You mentioned laudanum. And I remember in the movie, The Shootist, John Wayne only had to go see Jimmy Stewart in his office to get a bottle of that. And he was drinking it throughout the movie. He was dying of stomach cancer, I think.
Colon cancer.
Was it colon cancer?
Yeah.
Okay, well. He had cancer, let's say, all right?
Well, it was definitely cancer, and the way the depiction was colon cancer, because they basically did the symptoms were described of advanced colon cancer.
Yeah, okay. Well, nevertheless, I don't even know if back in that day they actually had cancer. You know, but Jimmy Stewart.
That was what my mother said. She laughed her head off when they did that scene. She says they didn't have cancer in the 1880s and 1890s. And when Queen Victoria died in 1910, there was less than 1% of 1% of any disease, of all diseases, were listed as a cancer. And most cancers were something that the word cancer was used on something that a doctor didn't know what it was, and it was only used in New York for the first time in 1908.
Yeah. Well, it was the subliminal selling of another pharmaceutical product, even if...
Right. That's exactly what it was.
See, yeah, because they kept showing the shot of him drinking out of that little bottle, you know, stick a cork in it, and, you know, as soon as he'd have a shootout, then he'd have to sit down and take a sip out of the bottle.
Yeah, because he was hurt, supposedly.
Yeah. Well, I just bring that up. I mean, I recall that, and certainly if they had it back then, if they had laudanum in those days, it wasn't for treating cancer. So
no, it was a painkiller. I actually have two or three actual bottles that my mother collected back in the 40s that have the word laudanum written across it. And a skull and bones on the label.
Yeah,
so that's how dangerous it was.
It was and that represents poison, doesn't it?
Right. That it had the directions on there. I mean, it was very, I wouldn't say controlled. It was very well itemized what it was used for the killing of Paid. Okay? And it's what we do today when you go into the hospital and you want a local anesthesia, only the laudanum just basically would kill the entire body, the nerves of the entire body.
Yeah.
And that's what laudanum did.
Yeah. Well, not that we have to dwell on that. I just, that was
That's cool.
One of those rambling thoughts that I had.
We're just trying to educate the audience to the fact that, in the course of 110 years, we've gone from a law book that we call the United States Code that had a maximum of 764 pages, one book, one volume, to now we have the United States Code that the United States Code on automobiles is almost 3 feet high. Well, no, it's not 3 feet. It's probably about 18 inches. Okay? If you take the United States Code and put them on a table and stack it up, it's about 18 inches. All five volumes are about 18 inches high.
Yeah, that's a foot and a half. That's about half of what he said prior. Still a lot, isn't it?
It's still a lot, and in the book, the United States Code of 1897, and all the way up until about 1910, when they started increasing the books, is depicted in a movie with the Law West of the Pecos.
Mm-hmm.
And the actual printing of the United States Code is used in that movie, the Law West of the Pecos, and most of you out there know who I'm talking about. The book literally is no more than about 6 inches thick. So we've come a long way in developing laws, basically, to put people in jail. And law's a business, people. The business is the law, and the law has rules. The rules are the law. And it's until you understand that it's a business, and the fact that we have all these prisons in America that need occupants, that's why people are being arrested from everything from not having a seatbelt to smoking in a car with their kids in the back seat. Or, wait a minute, how about arresting the driver of a pickup because he's got two passengers in the back end of the pickup truck? That's a new law here in Arkansas on the books, and they're arresting the driver and hauling him to jail. It's all about revenue, Don.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then we have several designations of law, and what gets me is they refer to law as the legal system, and really, what does legal mean? Well, if I look up the word legal, it says of or based on or concerned with the law, but that's kind of
that still doesn't define it.
Yeah, it doesn't define it. It's another thing that has sprung out of it, hasn't it?
Correct.
Okay.
And then where do we get all of this? What's the big deal? People out there will, hey Drew, you drifted off of the fact of the internet. No, I didn't. It's all the internet law that's being shoved down our throat, the controlling of the internet, has been discussed for 15 years. We go all the way back to 1995. The Richard Stockton College of New Jersey actually did a thesis on controlling the internet content. Richard C. Trout Montana did a thesis on this, and it's posted on the internet. It's not a little bitty one-page deal. It's something in the neighborhood of about 7 pages long, printed out in 12-point print. we're just, every time we turn around, Congress is making laws. We've got more laws on the books right now than the rest of the world had before, if they tally up all the laws for the last 2,000 years, taking out the last 110. We don't need 4 million laws.
Yeah. Well, we could use the old, I don't know if it's a Southern phrase, there's a phrase out there, they got more laws than Carter's has pills.
Yeah, Carter has, they have more laws than Carter has little liver pills. And there's a lot of people out there, there's a lot of kids out there, Don, that don't even know about Carter little liver pills. They think of Carter, the peanut farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of disparities out there, people. And what do you want to talk about? What's actually going on? Well, this all affects you, ladies and gentlemen. And things like, how about tomorrow? My show tomorrow. I'm gonna have Colonel Joe Hart, who has a patent for the cure for cancer. Now, here's a man that obviously had to do some well-rounded proof, because he's got a patent through the patent office for the cure of cancer. Very, very extremely knowledgeable. He's a colonel of the United States Air Force, retired, World War II, Army Corps, and then he diverted over into the United States Air Force, and he holds a patent on the cure for cancer. And we've got, natural herbs out there that are listed right here on BBS Radio. And there's a new herb that's being touted that the medical society has known about all the way back to the 1920s, Don. And it's called hibiscus tea.
Mm-hmm.
And hibiscus tea is now getting recognized as a product that will significantly reduce high blood pressure in people that are at risk with high blood pressure. And all they've got to do is drink 3 cups of hibiscus tea a day to reduce the severe high blood pressure. And the cardiovascular benefits for the people at risk of hypertension is insurmountable. And where is this coming from? This is coming from the medical team at Tufts University, T-U-F-T-S, Tufts University. I've never heard of Tufts University, but a doctor of medicine over there did a 240-page study with a blind test covering 3 years. And now he's got documented evidence that the big pharmaceuticals are just rolling all over themselves, mattered a hen in a field of wolves, because all of a sudden the American people have an article about hibiscus tea, to cure blood pressure.
Mm-hmm. Now, Drew, do you know when that patent was actually granted? Filed and granted. Usually it's a year or 2 or 3 before it's actually granted, but
it took him 7 years to get it granted, and he's had it for over 10. He started on it in the 1980s. Okay? And you can look up the patent information and the patent number on his website, I think it's ColonelJoe.com.
Colonel written out?
No, COL.
Okay. COLJoe.com?
Yeah. I'll double check it just for my
yep.
check. But yeah, that's it. ColonelCOLJOE.com.
Yeah.
And he lists his patent number right there on the front page.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, you know what they use oxalic acid for? And I'm not saying that
it's... I know what they use oxalic acid for. They use it to clean the wood on boats.
And you can use it to, when you're going to detail a car and you want to remove old wax and and grit and grime that won't wash off. You can create a solution in a bucket of water, warm water.
Yeah.
And basically apply it either with a brush or a rag, like you would when you're washing your car with.
It's usually used by detail artists to clean the mildew off of cars and before they come back and put a high gloss shine on it.
And body shops use it, and even automotive manufacturers. They use that before they send the car out.
Well, he talks about oxalic acid, vegetables, and the fact that the benefits of oxalic acid that is in God's natural ingredients, such as carrots, beets, and dark chocolate, that are naturally forming, and the fact that oxalic acid is killed by electronic magnetic field when you process carrots in a food processor, the oxalate acid benefits are destroyed by the magnetic field.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. When I first heard Colonel Joe back in 2004, Frank Whalen's radio show, I looked up the magnetic field of a blender, and I was amazed at the notorious amount of basically energy killing electronic waves that are killing nutrients in food.
Mm-hmm.
And half of your nutrients in your food are destroyed by a blender it has a large electric motor in it. And I started working on different ways to use blenders, but utilizing shafts where I could put the blender in a cabinet underneath the shelf. And with the shaft coming up to where I could work, you know, have my blender on the cabinet tabletop, and utilize it there so far away from the motor. And I've got all that designed out, but I have never put together a kitchen to where, you know, that would be in such a way. But I did go out and buy a hand crank, juicer and found out that, hand crank juicing, the flavor and the taste of carrot juice through a hand crank juicer was just unbelievable. It just blew me away.
Yeah, I don't know if we ever had hand crank blenders. I think, you know, I remember the things like my mom would use to mix up cake batter or you know, something like that. You know, the type I'm talking that has these two little heads that sort of revolve around each other as you turn a crank.
Yeah.
And you stick it in the bowl and do that. And if you hold it up too high, it splatters all over the room, you know.
Amen. You know? I played with that enough.
Yeah. And we had to usually clean them up, too, didn't we?
Oh, yeah. Either that or the razor strap came off the wall.
Yeah. It's amazing the sequence of events that occur when you use such devices, you know. But, when you talk about magnetic fields or, you know, microwave technology, you know, we're told the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, which has gone underground, actually outlawed the microwave oven. Now, why is it that, first of all, maybe it was an issue of being able to afford it that they outlawed it. In other words, you're not...
No. Even today in the Ukraine, you cannot find a microwave in Ukraine because they're outlawed.
Yeah, well...
In the Crimean, my girlfriend who lives in the Crimean, which is southeastern Ukraine... if you get caught trying to smuggle a microwave into the Ukraine, you're going to get 30 days in jail.
Well, you know, when you consider all the dangers and the drawbacks, let's say, you know, I mean, if you make a list of pluses and minuses, what does a microwave oven do?
It turns food to sawdust.
It
flavor.
It heats up the moisture. It heats up the humidity within whatever it is. And so when they package foods for microwaving purposes, they include water. And you open up a meal that is microwavable, it has ice all over it because there's moisture in it. So it heats up the water. But people don't consider what else is being heated up or what happens after you consume it while it's still going through that process. Even though the oven is turned off, that process is still going on, isn't it?
Yes. And we actually have meters to check for electromagnetic field emittance around a microwave when it's turned off. And you'd be surprised. You know, people talk about women with breast cancer. Well, wait a minute. You know, you take a woman, most women, the average woman in America is 5'5". The average woman height in America is 5'5". Well, you figure when a microwave sits on a cabinet top, that's right at chest level for about 80% of all women in America.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out there throwing their food in the microwave and cooking meals for the family in a microwave, warming up coffee in a microwave, making popcorn in a microwave. You know?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's no telling how, you know, how much that does. And you don't see breast cancer in Russia. You know, they do have breast cancer in Russia, but they don't have anywhere close to what America has.
It's certainly not being caused by microwave ovens if they're not using them.
Okay. So,
yeah.
The ones that even the women that smoke in Russia, it do not have the disparity of lung cancer that American women have that smoke in the United States. It's so disproportional. So, you know, what's the difference? Well, it's all about the chemicals that are in the tobacco, and it's all about the water that's in the microwave food, microwavable food, and something is happening in the United States. So you have to look at, okay, well, we don't have microwaves in the Ukraine, and we have less than one-tenth of the women between the ages of 40 and 60 compared to the number of women in the same age group in the United States that have, if you take, you know, any group of women, you know, take 1,000 women from any state in the Union and compare it to any one of the regions of the Ukraine, and you're going to find that less than one-tenth of the women in the Ukraine have got cancer compared to the number of women in the United States that would have such.
Yeah. Now, Drew, hold on to that thought. We've got a caller, and Scott.
Good. I want to take a vacation, take a nap.
Well, you're going to have to probably answer a question here. We've got Gary in Arkansas on the line. Gary, welcome to Evident Footprints. A question or comment for Drew Raines?
Kind of a comment, I guess. Good evening to both of you gentlemen. Thank you for taking
the
call. You
too. I should have said good evening, too.
Yeah, the microwave operates on 2.5 gigahertz, which happens to be the resonant frequency of the water molecule. And it violently vibrates the water molecule, thus giving heat. And as such, it changes the molecular structure of water. Going one step further, it also takes protein and breaks it down into fragments, which is kind of like messing with the DNA and all this other stuff. So you're getting Frankenfood when you put it through this process. And also, you might want to note that all portable wireless phones and also your cell phones, I believe, operate on 2.5 gigahertz
I think it's 2.4. Yeah.
Huh?
I think it's 0.1% less or lower.
It's 2.41.
Yeah, it's closer to 2.4, we'll say.
Well, it's pretty close. Bottom line is they're using the second harmonic on the second generation of wireless phones, which is 4 gigahertz, basically.
Yeah. Gary, did you read the study from the University of Stockholm, Sweden, that came out last year in January? Matter of fact, a year ago and a month ago. 1 year and 1 month ago.
No, I have not, but I am aware that Sweden and some of the Scandinavian countries have outlawed microwaves, and that's been so for several years.
Well, that's true, but a year ago they outlawed any child under the age of 18 from owning a cell phone because of the dangers of the emitting harmonic waves the cell phone puts out on the brain.
Well, since that cell phone's operating on either first harmonic of 2.5 gigs, which you know, basically shakes the water molecule. Hell, the brain is mostly water, so you can imagine what that's
there doing. You go! And here's an experiment for the audience. You can take two cell phones, put them down on your dining room table, approximately 8 inches apart, take a room temperature raw egg.
In the shell.
Put it in between those two phones, come back in an hour, and you want poached egg, or you got poached egg?
I've heard of that. That's all I have to say, gentlemen, so beware of not only microwaves, but your iPhones and your wireless phones are all bad.
Yeah.
Hey, I appreciate you calling in. It lets me know that there are people out there that are paying attention to what they're learning. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
you're
Gary,
very welcome.
Thanks for
Have a
call.
Good evening.
You too. Yeah, Gary called in last night when Ken Adachi was on, but we had so much Ken wanted to cover, we just weren't taking calls last night. But I'm sure you know he would have added his usual right on.
Kid's okay. He does the rest of the story out there, man. I want to tell you.
Yeah. Well, okay, so you were talking about these frequency rates amongst various populations around the world, and certainly you think...
Well, here's one for you. I discovered that in Africa, in the Sudan, that in a population of people that are basically starving to death, there was no cancer in any women, none whatsoever in their entire population of 7 million, okay, until the introduction of, guess what, Monsanto hybrid corn. And then with the 3 years after the introduction of Monsanto hybrid corn, women in the Sudan started having breast cancer.
Hmm.
It doesn't take rocket science to know that we got a problem out here, Don. We got a problem, and it's a problem of the greedy elitists wanting to control our food and then poison us with our own food. It brings to mind the movie Soylent Green.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The Charlton Heston, Edward G. Robinson.
Edward G. Robinson's last movie.
Don't eat the food. It's Soylent Green. It's people.
Yeah, don't eat the food. It's people.
It's people, yeah. Soylent Green is people. Something like that he was yelling.
And that was what? That movie came out in the early 70s. That's 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Almost.
Yeah.
And the movie actress that was in there, that would put her about 65 now.
Yeah.
And Charlton Heston called her on the telephone at the end of the movie and says, do everything you can. Stay beautiful. Do whatever you can to stay in that apartment. And he was hinting at the fact that she was able to get eggs and food, you know, real food, not soiled green food.
You know, there's another thing that you brought to mind from that movie, and it's been many, many years since I've seen it, but it definitely impacts you when you consider the technologies that are, or the concepts that are introduced in within the theme of the movie. You recall when Edward G. Robinson was dying and they had him on this sort of like a table. It looked like he was in an operating room, but this was his departure room. And there was a screen right there on the wall next to him. And he saw a video review of his whole life projected on that screen. You recall that?
Yes.
I think it's, you know, it started out, they made it look like a journey, like he was traveling over water.
Uh-huh.
Almost like a fully conscious astral travel. And they showed these images just racing by, you know, at high speed. And this was actually preceding his death, but this was his opportunity to review his life. You know, what do you think that they intended for us to consider in that? Because obviously they were you know, tantalizing it, us, by sticking, you know, this technological bone before our noses. You have any thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. I remember that scene. I remember... I thought it was just a review of nature that they were trying to show Edward G. Robinson a view of nature.
Yeah, well, I think deeper, maybe I'm reading in deeper, but to me it seemed like maybe it represented the things about his life that he cherished, maybe
uh-huh.
came through, you know?
Maybe. Yeah, I see what you're saying. And because Charlton Heston was a police officer, he was able to go up and view from the balcony
mm-hmm.
what Edward G. was watching,
yeah.
okay, before he passed on. And that was when Heston followed the body of Edward G. through the system and to see where they were going to bury him.
Yeah.
And found out that his body was being thrown into a mixing vat that made Soylent Green.
Or you could consider that they were storing his memories as if they were taking...
Correct. Just storing his memories as if they, you know, they were going to put him in another body.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, now, with that said, that brings us all the way to 2009... with this new movie that just got released here in December called Surrogate, The Surrogates. And if you haven't, and many of you out there that haven't seen this, this is a movie where you lay down in your bedroom or your house, in a, you put this machine on your head, and when the minute you're hooked up to it, a robot body of your that looks like you, but in a younger self, a more physical, able person, comes to life, and you and your mind control the surrogate. And if the surrogate body is destroyed because of a gunfight or because he got ran over or a car wreck, the body, the original body, is not hurt or harmed. Okay? But a malfunction happens, and the surrogate host, when the surrogate host dies, the original dies. Mm. And that's basically what the movie is all about. But the investigation of the sci-fi. But at the end of the movie, it literally shows how many people choose to have a surrogate body so they can look pretty, be skinny, more intelligent, and it's amazing. You know, the movie Brainstorm. Remember that movie Brainstorm from 78.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's all about memories and the fact that you can take your you know, what's the next step? We're going to be playing God? And are we going to, and this goes all the way back to the theme at the beginning of the show. Who's going to control
mm-hmm.
the morality yeah. then?
Okay, Drew, keep that thought. We've got another caller on the line, David in Washington. Welcome to Evident Footprints. Question or comment? And by the way, how are you?
Very good. I hope you're doing well. And hi to Drew, too. I wanted to comment on the Soylent Green. I recall that scene you were describing where Edward Robinson was lying in the bed. He was dying, or they were going to put him to sleep or something. And the scenes going by, I thought that it was similar in my mind, recollection, as what Drew had explained, where he was looking at the beautiful things that existed in his former years. The Charlton Heston, being much younger, said, I never realized it was so beautiful.
Why, yes.
That's his words. I never yeah. realized it was so beautiful.
I recall that now. Thanks for reminding me. You know, it's been a long time since I've seen it. You know, so.
Yeah, that stuck out in my mind. I think, well, as far as the message of the film, it probably contained a lot of things, and what the prime purpose of it was, I'm not sure, but it certainly was some propaganda and some mind-bending endeavor they embarked on to put that out. But it's scary a little bit about the future, food shortages, and look how bad it can get, so that when they come along then with the answer to the problem later, after the film has been around the world a couple of years, they'll have some suggestions on how we might improve the food supply with chemicals, and let's modify them genetically and put animal parts in them, and the corn that causes breast cancer in women.
Well, you know, probably the underlying truth behind all of those movies even goes back to the Twilight Zone episode called To Serve Man. Do you recall that? Where
I remember a film. It was with a spaceship sort of thing, where they had a book, and they could only told them that the title was To Serve Man.
Yeah.
And in the end, when they flew away, he said, "It's a cookbook."
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. We were visited by beings from another realm, right? And
to help us.
And they took a bunch of people with them and told them how great life was going to be at the end of the movie. And then it was too late. They had already disembarked.
And the one actor who heard his secretary yell at him that it was a cookbook, he wouldn't eat any food, he wouldn't eat anything on their spaceship.
Yeah.
They kept coming in and said, "You've got to eat. You know, you can't just you can't." He was basically saying, "Well, if I'm going to die, I'm going to starve myself to death. So you, I'm not going to be some pig on a stick." I mean, that was the idea.
Yeah, and is it any wonder that they call the newest dreaded disease swine flu? Blame it on the pigs, you know?
Yeah,
The other white meat.
The other white meat, okay.
I had a friend of mine tonight here earlier this evening gave me a DVD, sort of a private published thing. It's called Harbinger 2. Have you heard of that?
No. I know what a Harbinger is, but I haven't heard of Harbinger 1, so I wouldn't...
It's a preacher that is the most dynamic preaching. I mean, it's powerful. And he's Jewish, and it's a Jewish Christian congregation on New Jersey. They're located in New Jersey, and he gave a couple of sermons. Let me look the word here. It's called Harbinger. He just wrote on the front of this. Shemitah is the word that he used probably 500 times in his sermon. You know, I guess he wants to embed that in their minds. It's important. You'll have to look. I can't really go into. I know it's getting late, but there's a lot of detail in it that's important to understand. And he's got this script that he speaks from. It's very powerfully presented, and he has people standing with their arms in the air at the end of the end of the sermon. I've never seen anything like it. It's worth looking at and to see what you think about it. I've got my ideas on what it is. I think it's propaganda, but I don't believe it. I don't know that it's all true what he's saying. He's quoting from the Bible, and it's like what goes around comes around. He's quoting from the Old Testament and the New, talking about passages in the Bible that describe the 7 year, every 7 years, the Hebrews, the Israelites, were to have a Sabbath. And they began building up to it on the very last day of Elul, I think it's the month in the Hebrew calendar. And but that was when at sundown on that day, on the seventh, every 7 years, begins a remission of all debts. And all debts are forgiven. And you pick no fruit, you plant no fruit, you don't eat anything, but the previous 3 years are spent in building up a supply to store away to eat through that year and the following 2 years, I believe. And it takes three. Yeah.
Do you know if this was produced by John MacArthur?
I don't know. I didn't. He gave me about three of them tonight, and I was. There's two of these. One's from 2009, and the other, I'm not sure what year it was. Maybe they're. Oh, they had a conference someplace on July of last year, July 1st, I think, of last year. And he talks about how when the Twin Towers came down, that's a significant date, and he analyzes it and gives you the numbers that they've got it all fully developed and explained very carefully. And in precise terms, and it was easy to follow what he was saying, but I think it's a ruse. But it's too true. Sounds too good to be true. It is too good to be.
It's
true.
It's a fiction.
Yeah,
it sounds too good to be true. If it sounds too good to be true, it's a fiction.
Yeah,
it sounds like they're explaining away the whole thing, the 9/11 incident and all the crashes that are going on Wall Street, on the failure of the America Christians to follow God's laws, and they just spend it in lavish. Endowing themselves with lavish comforts and TV sets and cans of beer and that sort of thing.
Shift the blame on the people while the non-Christians are the ones actually committing the acts.
Oh yeah, it's all God doing this. See, is what he's saying. God is doing all of this, and these people are just emotional and just at the end when he really is a a crowd pleaser and a rousing speaker. But if you read through the lines, it's easy to avoid falling into that that hypnotic trap.
Yeah, there are some references to what you're describing on Google. You have to go a little bit past the first page. Otherwise, you'll get hung up with a Kenyan woman looking for her soulmate. So
far for the course these days.
Yeah, but I think that's that name that I brought out, John MacArthur, may have something to do with that. There's a piece that he's authored that's there, and it I see something referring to a Shemitah cycle. So
that's it.
Yeah,
that's it. And the man's name doing the speaking. He's probably a rabbi. His last name is Khan, spelled with a C, A-H-N. He's the man, the speaker.
It's not spelled C-O-N, huh?
No. Yeah, well, it means the same thing, really, I think, in the it's just a revision of the spelling.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes with a K, and, you know.
Okay, well, David, we got to wrap up. We're about out
right.
of time here, but I want to thank you for your call. Insightful information. We'll definitely look into it. And the name of the DVD, either one, is it something?
Harbinger.
Harbinger, that's right. You mentioned that. Okay.
Roman numeral 2 after it. And,
okay.
I don't have any information on the front of the disc because it was a homemade disc, and he just wrote it with a little soft tip pen.
Yeah,
the names of it, but he did put that Shemitah.
Okay.
Shemitah on it. S H E M I T A H, I believe is the way it's spelled.
Yes. Okay. Well thanks
don't
for the information,
that,
and do call again.
Friend. Okay, thanks much. Good night.
All right. Good
night. Good night.
Well, Drew.
That was a fast hour.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that before we say good night?
No, I think he laid it out real well. And this is what this is something the audience has to understand. Information that you heard tonight from the callers, it's easily accessible on the internet. And here we are trying to control what the internet has to offer. It's like the movie Soylent Green. You want to learn what the movie Soylent Green was about? You can chime it up and look for it. But the control of the internet and the control of that goes behind the scenes is going to prevent you from doing this with the filters that will be put out there. Well, you should be looking up the information on Soylent Green because you're not old enough, okay, to know about this futuristic movie for the year 2022, where the secret ingredient to the Soylent Green food supply is the people that are dying. Where are we going to put all the bodies?
It was a rendering plant for people is what it was.
Yeah. So with all of that, you've got the gentleman come forth, and this information is educating. Our internet is an educational tool. And yes, there's a lot of pornography on it, but at the same time, there's this sicko information on the pornography, shove it off to the side. Turn the dial. I don't have a TV. Ladies and gentlemen, you want an eye-opener? Take your television, unplug it. Literally, unplug your TV set and put it in the corner of the room and don't watch television for 7 days. Just 7 days. See if you can. See that you are addicted to it. And understand that once you get away from the television and you start going over to look at, the newspaper, you want to look at other things, you're finding that you've been addicted to TV and what the mainstream media wants to feed you. On the other side, you've got the internet to go out and find the truth, and that's what the Illuminati, that's what the power to be elitist, these Nazis want to do. If you think Nazi Pelosi is sitting in Washington D.C. and doesn't want to control everything in your life as she abuses her office, you got another thing coming. And I want to thank you, Don, for letting me come on the show tonight to give my rant.
Yeah, I want to thank you for coming on the show and let the listeners know that your website is amd.elequity.com, just like it sounds, amd.elequity.com. And your show, A Marine's Disquisition, airs Monday through Friday on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, which is not online. Those are independent broadcasters.
And to my friends in New Zealand, it is from 9 o'clock New Zealand time on Tuesday through 9 o'clock on Saturday, not Monday. So remember that until the 15th of this month, I'll start doing a 9 o'clock show for you guys down under.
And also heard on blogtalkradio.com.
Around the world.
Around the world. Drew, thanks very much. Very interesting show tonight. I look forward to seeing you next Thursday.
If I don't fall asleep.
If you don't.
And the power don't go out.
Well, get some sleep in the meantime, okay?
At least 2 hours.
Maybe you'll be awake by Thursday.
Okay.
All right. God bless you. Take care. Semper Fi.
Semper Fi to all my Marines around the world. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll be on the air here in a short 13 hours.
Okay. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com and tonight's special guest, Drew Malone Raines III. I want to thank Wind Talkers Radio Network and blogtalkradio.com for carrying the show, as well as bbsradio.com. Special thanks go out to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. Seth Hendrick and Don Newsom on the sound. And our callers tonight, both Gary and David, and all the rest of the listeners around the world, want to thank you for tuning in. Join us tomorrow night when my special guest will be scientist inventor Jim Murray. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.